You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 25th of October 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we are broadcasting live tonight at RadioAryan.com because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, producer extraordinaire, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, good evening to you, sir.
Run off the tongue, that, didn't it, then?
It did, yeah.
What a mistake.
Very eloquent tonight. How are you? Well,
by my calculations, are we to the day 2 months off Christmas?
Wow, I think you are correct there.
Just when you said 25th of October, I thought, hello.
Yeah, 2 months to go, 2 months to go. I wonder how long we've been doing the show for now. Didn't we have a 200 and something, 250th episode a while back, I think?
Five years
we've been doing the show. I wonder how many Christmases we've done. We've done a few Christmas specials as well, haven't we, I think, thinking about it.
I'm pretty sure we have, yeah.
Yes, yes. Is there going to be anything truthful out films are going to be producing that can be bought as a Christmas present over the festive period, you know?
Well, I should by next week have finished The Secret Masonic Victory, but I've yet to get in touch with the website. I've been trying to get in touch with the website. I don't go on Gab. So if you see the guys knocking around, just give them a shout to send me a message, will you?
Yeah, we'll do. But it would be good if you could, if you finish the whole series of Freemasonic Victory, if you could then get that, put that on a USB stick and sell that, you know, as a Christmas present for people. Maybe that's an idea.
That would be an idea. That would be an idea.
I guess DVDs
especially
are a bit
if you've got
obsolete.
A big screen.
Yeah. It'd be good to see.
On a big screen, it looks good.
And it was great watching Greatest Story Never Told. I mean, I've seen that a few times on a big screen. It's fantastic, you know. It was great actually having the discs, having the discs as well, having the box, and
right.
You know, I don't know quite how it goes with having a USB stick now. I think that maybe you can get these USB sticks printed, can't you?
Well, I think you can do. I think, but the idea is either plug it into a laptop into the TV, or some ticket direct into the TV, I think.
Yeah, I think you've got to have quite a modern TV to do that, haven't you? I think some of these older ones, they will accept USB sticks, but sometimes they won't actually accept video on them. But I hope you manage to get that sorted, because there are a lot of people that, you know, they want to have a hard copy of your documentaries rather than...
That's true. You know? I mean, I always made sure that they were available free on the internet, but people still, in quite a number, wanted it as an hard copy, like you say.
Well, it's so much more useful then, isn't it? Because you can carry it around to somebody's house or you can loan it to somebody to watch. I think that's the best way to do things because, you know, in what we're doing with nationalism, we want to get our information out to people and we're also creative as well, but we also need to make money. And I think the best way of doing things is to make something available online for free and also available for people to buy. I mean, William Fink does that with his Christiginia stuff. Mark Cullett does that with his book, The Fall of Western Man. And you've done that with your series. And I think that's the best way to do it.
Well, some people suggested that I didn't put the last episode on, and which I didn't think was right. And I just said, like, you know, if people want to buy it, they'll buy it. If they don't, they don't. But at least they would have seen it for free. Some people can't afford it, you know what I mean? So I don't think it was the wrong decision.
How is the last episode coming along? Have you been working on it this week?
Actually, it's looking pretty good. One or two things that I learnt that I didn't know, again. And I'm putting a bit of a montage at the end for the, because I don't particularly just like sources going up and scrolling and on a black screen. I like it to be, you know, at least visual, so it's not totally boring, which I'm working on.
Can you let us in on some of these surprises?
Surprises as in information?
Yeah, yeah. Is that possible?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think 1936 was the year that it was announced that Iranians did not come under the Nuremberg laws, the racial laws. And in 1939, they sent 7,500 books, scientific books, out to Iran because of this Aryan connection. And also, the Allies, also knowing about the Aryan connection and the deals that they were doing with Germany, because obviously there's a worldwide blockade on, invaded Iran, which was Britain and Russia, and did what they did.
Britain and Russia invaded.
Yeah, a dual assault on Iran, would you believe?
Well, yeah, I would believe that. I mean, they've caused loads of problems. They've caused loads of problems over there in Iran, haven't they, over the years? The revolution
they want to take them out now. I don't particularly think they want Aryans in the New World Order, to be honest, when it gets down to it.
Yeah, originally Persia, I mean, obviously that's where the term Aryan came from, but it was also used in India, and it's the root of the word aristocracy, and we've got Era, which is Ireland, and it means noble and honourable, and it also has racial connotations as well, like a race of Aryans were a race of noble, honourable people, and way back when, that was the centre of the Indo-Aryans, was Persia. But then it all got spoilt by miscegenation later on. I mean, even before the Arabs invaded, but when the Arabs invaded, that was, you know, that was the final nail in the coffin, really. No longer was Persia a white nation. But when the Persians were fighting the Greeks, both the Greeks and the Persians were white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were as white as we are today. They may have looked a little bit different, but only what selective adaptation would do over 1,000 years. I mean, if you imagine what Europeans looked like 1,000 years ago, it would be different to how we look now. They would be slightly smaller, and you know, they just would look different, where people have sexually selected for a certain type for the last 1,000 years. Because I saw a dig in India, and it was the Mohenjo-Daro civilization, one of the earliest civilizations. And they got two bodies from that, and they reconstructed the faces. And basically they showed that they weren't Dravidians. They certainly weren't black. They looked almost Slavic. One of them looked Slavic. They looked similar to us today, but not exactly the same. And people were saying, well, they can't be white because they don't look like us today. But that, you know, you're talking about white people 3,000 years ago.
I get you.
So, of course, there's going to be changes.
Well, I checked it because, obviously, when I saw, you know, that they weren't, you know, they weren't under the laws of Nuremberg, the racial laws, I thought, well, I better check this one out because I heard it in a documentary. And I did. I checked it all out and it was right. Yeah, in 1936, they announced that one. 39. That's when they sent, you know, the library books.
What do you mean they're not under the Nuremberg
racial laws?
Laws
of Nuremberg?
Because the racial laws were basically saying that they couldn't marry Jews. So what was
whatever they were, they were as Germans. They were classed as Germans.
They were saying they were Germans. I'm not sure they would have said they were Germans.
Not Germans, but Aryan.
Aryan.
So they were, you know,
part of the Aryan, part like of Germans the Aryan family.
Well, Germans didn't come under them laws. Yeah, they didn't come under them laws with them.
Right. I'm guessing they were saying that they're not Jews. Basically, they're not Jews. They're not the same as the Arabs or the Jews or any of that lot. Basically, I'm guessing is probably what they were saying. Well, I've found another one of these booklets by Goebbels that he wrote.
Mr. Goebbels.
Yeah, yeah, the propaganda minister. I've been looking into his life today, actually, on Wikipedia. He's quite an incredibly hard-working man who, at first, he wasn't certain whether to follow Hitler. He was sort of working with the Strassers, and then he saw a Hitler speech and was so moved by it. He was like, this is the man to follow. This is the man that I'm going to work for. And he's going to save Germany. And he was exceptional at what he did with film and movies and radio and books, and just trying to get everything so that it was promoting healthy morals and promoting what was good for the race. And this book here that I've found, which is from 1929, obviously this is a couple of years before the National Socialists got voted into power, but it gives us an idea of what the platform was. It gives us an idea of what the National Socialists were telling the general public about their platform, which is exactly the same as it stayed right the way through and until the end. But this is the platform that they managed to win the election on, which I find particularly interesting.
Mm.
You know, it's not like they were hiding anything. And the actual booklet itself is called "Those Damn Nazis!" exclamation mark. So it's like a bit of irony there, a bit of humour there in the title.
Yeah, but I did a video call that once. And I showed the lighter side of them, with, you know, the soldiers with cubs and everything, with animals and kittens.
Yeah, there's a really good illustrated picture, isn't there, of Goering, and it's got all the animals,
yes,
and they're all doing the Roman salute. They're all thanking Goering because there had been a law made to prevent vivisection and experimenting on animals. Mm. Yeah, very, very sweet.
Correct, yeah.
Very sweet picture, that one. There's four illustrations in this book, and they're pretty good as well. They sort of stand up to the test
of time. Link you gave me, I couldn't get it because it said I were prohibited or something. They must know who I am.
Yeah, it's from a German site. It's from the official German propaganda archive. Well, it's quite a funny picture. It's basically showing that the Jew disguises himself, and it's got a Jew disguising himself as a priest, and it's got a Jew disguising himself as a German nationalist. And when he's disguising himself as a German nationalist, he's dressed up as a pagan, and he's got his Viking horns and his beard, and you just think, well, how true is that? And how true is that to this day? That
it is true, they will
try to subvert nationalism by pushing this anti-Christian and pro-pagan ideas.
Greater trees,
yeah. So that's still very true to this day. So there are five illustrations and five main topics, which I thought we could get into. We'll probably just get into the first two tonight, and how it applies to today. I think the first one is why we are nationalists. And he says, we are nationalists because we see the nation as the only way to bring all the forces of the nation together to preserve and improve our existence and the conditions under which we live. So you're talking about preserving the people, improving our existence. I mean, that's pretty similar to the 14 words, isn't it, really? Using same sort of language. It says, the nation is the organic union of a people to protect its life. To be national is to affirm this union in word and in deed. To be national has nothing to do with a form of government or a symbol. It is an affirmation of things and not forms. Forms can change, their content remains. If form and content agree, then the nationalist affirms both. If they conflict, the nationalist fights for the content and against the form. One may not put the symbol above the content. If that happens, the battle is on the wrong field and one's strength is lost in formalism. The real aim of nationalism, the nation, is lost. And there's so much wisdom that's in that, I think. You know, it's, when it's saying that you've got content and you've got form, that the content would be the British people, genetically the British people, but the form of the British people, the form of our government, doesn't represent the British people, and it's corrupt, and you've got this party system where it's fighting against one another, and even though it waves the British flag and it claims to represent Britain, it's in conflict with the people, particularly at the moment with Brexit. So it's saying that they don't represent the nation. The nation is not a proposition nation. The nation is not a matter of having a piece of paper that tells you that you're British. The nation is the ethnic nation. It's the people that are all related through blood, basically.
It's strange, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, the only time you see anything national in this country is whether it's an important World Cup game or they're about to invade the Falkland Islands. Suddenly, everything goes nationalistic then, but then it goes back to internationalism as soon as things die down.
Well, I think that comes under putting the symbol above the content, doesn't it? They're worshipping the symbol.
I think it does.
Just the symbol of Britain. Right. So we'll support this football team, even though 80% of the football team are African. We'll support it because they say it's the English football team.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's the same thing happening today that they noticed happening back then. This is why we say that National Socialism was based on natural law, and natural law doesn't change. And you know, you can see that by looking at these books, you know, 80 years old, and it's still describing the same problems that we have today, because we'll always have problems if we go against natural law.
Mm. He says, they don't seem to understand that one.
Yeah, they don't seem to get that. I think that they can override natural law, don't they? I think that man is stronger than nature, and it's not. It's the other way around. He says, that is how things are today in Germany. Nationalism has turned into bourgeois patriotism, and its defenders are battling windmills. One says Germany and means the monarchy. Another proclaims freedom and means black, white and red, the colours of the German flag. Would our situation today be any different if we replaced the Republic with a monarchy and flew the black, white and red flag? The colony would have different wallpaper, but its nature, its content would stay the same. Indeed, things would be even worse, for a facade that conceals the facts dissipates the forces today fighting against slavery. And I think that, you know, you can find an analogy with this, again with Brexit, with a group like UKIP. And a civic nationalism. And that's what this bourgeois patriotism is. Oh, we want our sovereignty and we want to leave the European Union so that we can open up our borders to the Commonwealth and bring in lots of dark-skinned foreigners instead of white-skinned ones. Ridiculous.
Exactly, yeah.
Back then you had the monarchy against the republic, and now you've got... you know, you got the Leavers against the Remainers, but what really matters is the ethnic nation and the ethnic nation that is being replaced. And so all the efforts can end up being fought either for or against Brexit, and whichever side wins, people will have spent all their force on doing that when the really important thing is the nation. And nobody's speaking up for that. We're using up all our energy on this other issue of whether we stay in the EU or whether we leave the EU. So again, you got the same thing happening now. Back then it was, shall we have a republic or shall we have a monarchy? And now it's, shall we stay in the EU or shall we come out?
Well, so, it's like 3 years that's gone on there. So there's a lot of things gone on there where it's been noticed, I'm pretty sure, because when Brexit's dominated for as long as it has done, it's quite easy to get other laws through and certain other aspects of their interests without the nation noticing.
Well, they've spent 3.5 years and they still haven't left. They've got that 150-page paper, which Corbyn says, well, we can't possibly have enough time to look at that in 2 weeks. I mean, that's only 2 pages a day, isn't it? It's not really that much. I think they're just...
I was just going to say, there's somebody in a high-up place somewhere that doesn't want us to leave. I'm pretty sure about that one.
There's more than one. More than one, Dennis.
Probably more than one, yeah.
You could be forgiven for thinking that it's the Speaker of the House of Commons and he's the guy at the top.
He oversteps the mark at times, doesn't he, just?
Totally. I'd like to see him tried for treason. I think we might actually see that once he steps down. But I think one of the things they're doing, I mean, Boris's deal is very similar to Theresa May's deal, but they're just trying to push it through. And I think they're thinking, well, everybody's just absolutely sick of this and they just want it finished. And, you know, they will use that to try and get it through. And it reminds me of what Mr. I said about the end of the war. Everybody was just absolutely sick to death of the war, and they just wanted it over. So people didn't make a fuss about, you know, people being sent to the communist countries. They didn't make a fuss about Nuremberg because they were just sick to death of it all, and they wanted it ended. And it was ended.
Yeah, proven by the a prime minister who doesn't get elected after winning a war. That says more than anything.
Yeah, so we'll have to see what happens with Boris. I mean, I think this is why Boris is desperate to get it done before the general election, really, because otherwise he's going to go into this general election and people will think, well, he hasn't managed to succeed. He hasn't got us out of the EU yet.
Other than the it's a difficult one because he is up against some powerful forces. He's got to be. I mean, you know, Trump in America, he's kind of on the same side as what Boris is. He wouldn't want to see an EU at all. So, you know, there's a right and a left wing to all this. And the left wing, as we know, is the dominant wing in Britain. So he's got a battle on.
I would say that he's representing the bourgeois patriotism, the bourgeois nationalism that Goebbels is talking about.
Yeah, the ones who don't want to lose the land to the communists.
You know, I mean, that's just the situation we are in today. And really, the bourgeois patriot is preferable to the hardcore Marxist, I would suggest.
Yes, of course.
You know, it's like you got two devils there, and really we've got to pick the least wicked one, which is the bourgeois patriots, civic nationalism.
Which America had the same problem with Trump and Clinton. They had to choose between the two, didn't they? And Clinton would have been the worst one.
Yeah, so it's the same there. I mean, back then, you say 80 years ago, I mean, you know, there was a chance for these proper nationalist organisations to get into power, you know, all over Europe.
Yeah, that's changed now. That's why, you know, democracy is a farce, because these parties won't be allowed now.
No. No, that's it. You know, it's a different world now, and we have to make do with what we've got.
What we've got, exactly.
Continuing, bourgeois patriotism is the privilege of a class. It is the real reason for its decline. When 30 million are for something and 30 million are against it, things balance out and nothing happens. That is how things are with us. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We are the world's pariah, not because we do not have the courage to resist, but rather because our entire national energy is wasted in eternal and unproductive squabbling between the right and the left. Our way only goes downwards, and today one can already predict when we will fall into the abyss. So, yeah, still very, very similar to Brexit here. But also, this bourgeois patriotism is the privilege of a class, and because it seemed nationalism has seemed, you've either got the football hooligan type nationalism, or you've got the flag waving last night of the proms patriotism is the way that it's been put to the people. And this flag waving patriotism that we're you know, black, being black is just a different color of your skin and you're exactly the same as everybody else, that's a failure. People don't want to support that.
Well, yeah. Well, to me, nationalism is about coming together. You know, we're united as one. And being the Marxist process of Marxism is to break up even the family. You don't want to come in together of anybody. Probably that less people now can gather and have conversations in the pubs, because of God knows how many closed down over the past few years. And that's the target of Marxism, to break everybody up and make them individual. So it really goes against nationalism completely.
The family is the unit that civilization is based upon, isn't it? And when you look at the family, you've got a hierarchy there, and that's the natural system. And if you look at if you make that larger and you look at it as in, rather than the family, you've got the nation there, you've got the king that's in the role of the father, and he looks out for his children, which is the subjects. And altogether, that family is the nation. And we just have the word nationalist for it, but really it's just about realizing who your family are and who that matters. Yeah. So, of course, that's what they're going to attack. They're going to attack the family. They're going to split the family up. They're going to say that the children don't need to have a father there, that the mother doesn't need to have a father there, that the state will provide for and do all the everything that the father used to do in the past. Because if they can disrupt the family, then they know that the knock-on effect from that is the disruption of the state. And, of course, the disruption of the state means it's weakened, and they can move in and take it over with their supranational government, with international banking. All the rest of it is so much easier to get away with once you've weakened the nation. And the family is the building block of the nation, isn't it?
Well, it's a family that once over you could go, say there's certain areas where everybody knew everybody, they knew the name of the neighbours, they could go into the neighbour's house and wait for them to come home and have a cup of tea and doors would be open. All that's gone. We're now, that many people know that even the name of the neighbour these days. It's all been individualised.
Well, that's the other thing, isn't it? Instead of the family being the individual building block, they've tried to say, oh, it's the individual. And the individual doesn't have any connections. It doesn't matter where because the individual could be mixed race. So, you know, he hasn't got anybody that even looks like him in his ancestors. He hasn't got a nation that he's a part of. He's just an island. And all of this around him is provided for him to just take from and just become a consumer. And that's the other thing that they pushed on people. Because if you say that it's based around the family and your ancestors, well, that excludes the mixed race people, and that would be mean to them. And we don't want to be mean to people, so we're just not going to teach people about identity at all, because it would exclude these mixed race people. And we're not going to talk about the family either, and how that should be, because that will exclude the children of you know, the broken homes. And we're not going to talk about normal man and wife relations, because right, that would exclude the homosexuals. So you can see how they've done away with everything that is actually necessary to give integrity to the nation and actually protect the people, under the disguise of being more inclusive and more tolerant.
Yeah, it'll do away with their mixed race adverts at Christmas as well, won't it?
Yeah, they'll never do away with that, will they?
No.
Just as you think it can't get any worse, it gets worse.
It gets worse, yes.
Always the worst time of year for multiracial adverts is Christmas, which is bizarre, isn't it? Because, you know, Negroes are hardly a target audience with lots of disposable income. So who is it aimed at?
Yeah, but that's not the thought behind it all, is it?
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? You know, it's obviously not. So it's obviously not that they want to sell more products to Negroes. There has to be another reason. Well, the reason is selling Negroes as a product to white women. That's the point of the adverts.
Correct.
Getting back to...
It has to be. There's too many of them.
Getting back to Goebbels here, nationalism is more wide-reaching than internationalism. It sees things as they are. Only he who respects himself can respect others. If, as a German nationalist, I affirm Germany, how can I hold it against a French nationalist who affirms France? Only when these affirmations conflict in vital ways will there be a power political struggle. Internationalism cannot undo this reality. Its attempts at proof fail completely. And even when the facts seem to have some validity, nature, blood, the will to life, and the struggle for existence on this hard earth prove the falsity of fine theories. Again, you know, people that don't actually understand nationalism, they get a little bit confused by the way that, you know, all of us nationalists work together as white nationalists. They say, well, shouldn't you be against France or Italy? Well, no, I'm not against French nationalists or Italian nationalists. You know, we're all doing our best for our nation. That's the way it should be. And, you know, this Donald Trump is correct when he says this. You know, by making America great again, that's actually best for everybody else. Everybody else needs to be working hard to make their own country as best as it can be. Not holding back and saying, well, we can't do this because it might upset the Ugandans. Or we can't do this because it might upset you know, the Chileans or whatever, you've got to do what's best for your nation, because nobody else is going to be doing what's best for you. They're going to be doing what's best for themselves. So you can see back here, National Socialists had that idea.
I was just going to say, it reminds me actually of the Charmaine Division, which fought in Berlin to the very end. I just caught a video today about it, and this nationalism in France spread all over Europe to defend Europe from the communists, obviously. And like I said, you can't fault a nationalist from Italy or France, because he thinks exactly the same as you.
Well, that's why all these Waffen SS units came to Germany's mm-hmm. side to fight against Bolshevism. You know, you had the League of St. George from Britain. You know, you had legions from Latvia, legions from Estonia, from Belgium.
I listed a lot, didn't I? Right at the end of the Great Story, I was told a list of all the countries what sent people decided to go fight for Germany. So there must have been a hell of a propaganda campaign in America and in Britain, because, you know, people never got to the point, apart from one or two from Britain, but they never got to the point to thinking we'll join up with the Germans to fight communism. They were brainwashed before they got out there. They were fighting a monster.
Well, when you think of how brave those people must have been, because, you know, some of them were charged with treason when they got back.
Oh, yeah.
They'd gone to fight with Germany against the British. You know, they'd gone to fight against the Bolsheviks alongside Germany. And again, Mr. I was saying a lot of these, but like this League of St. George unit, when they came back, John Amory, he was hanged, but the rest of them weren't, because within a couple of years, Bolshevism was the enemy. And that's who we were supposed to be fighting against. You know, we had the Cold War. So they knew that was on the cards.
Although I do think there was an undercurrent of communism in this, always has been in this country.
Well, yeah, at the top, as you've shown, the banks were controlling the communists, and it was a phony war.
That's right, but
a phony.
They kind of had kind of fooled everybody to think that communism was contained in the East, and that was the perfect way of doing it, when actually it had already infiltrated America and was already here in Britain. At the highest level.
Tell me about this Charmaine Division. What was that?
Yeah, well, as you know, France was big early on in the war. And so a lot of French nationalists, in fact, I actually noted in the Communist Bible, in the Great Story Never Told, that there would be more French soldiers dying fighting for Germany than there were fighting for France, because the war with France only lasted 6 weeks. And these people signed up to fight for nationalism against communists fighting for Germany. And that would have been a number of years. Also, don't forget, Churchill did his little bit to sink the Navy, and people would have died as well on that day. So, you know, the French had been under Masonic rule since the French Revolution. Obviously, there's a certain amount of French who didn't like that situation, and who went off to fight. And from a group of about 300 or 400, I think they went down the last day, they were down to the final 30, I think, still fighting outside the bunker.
So they were defending Hitler in the last
Communism, the day for communism is the first day of May. They kept fighting till that day passed, because they didn't want to, you know, surrender or lay down arms on that particular day. When they did lay down arms, there was one instance where one of these free French generals said to the captured Charmaine, you know, what are you doing in German uniforms? To which one of the French turned around to the general and said, what are you doing in an American uniform? Needless to say, there was no trial, no court. They were taken round the back and shot.
Well, the French resistance, similarly, the French resistance, a lot of them weren't actually French. A lot of them were East European Jews.
Bolsheviks.
Yeah, I was listening to a Karolin Jaeger podcast that went into that. That was saying that most of them, in actual fact, is this French resistance. That's why they didn't have any concern for the French, because if they would get caught, then you know the whole village would get it, because you had to be really strict with these partisans. But these French resistance, they didn't care about that because they weren't even from France in the first place. They were coming in from
from
the east.
I think this was an official. This was an official general. I think it was one of de Gaulle's men, but he was dressed in an American uniform, and was asked why.
Well, the Germans
was a good question, to be honest.
Yeah, well, the Germans liberated Europe, didn't they? I mean, the way the history books tell it now, it was Germany invading these countries, but in actual fact, these countries were liberated from international capitalism and international banking. And they had their own banking systems that were set up. So they were liberated from all of that, from this system of slavery, which is what Goebbels talks about here. You know, slavery is a word that comes up again and again, and it came up a lot in that last booklet that we looked at. And this, this usury system, it just makes us all into slaves.
Well, I don't think the Charlemagne could have fought any harder than he did, but I'm pretty sure if they had a crystal ball and they saw France today, I think it would have drawn a couple of extra more out of them.
Well,
because
be
comparing
horrified.
France then to France today, it's a different country altogether.
They'd be horrified to see it today. I mean, there's quite a famous meme, isn't there, of France in 1940 or whatever, and then France in 2019, and it's, you know, it's full of Negroes and it's all on fire. And when you look back at it in 1940, it's, you know, you can walk the streets safely. There's not even, you got Germans there, but they haven't even got visible guns or anything like that. There's no system of oppression.
Yep.
Like we were taught about, the streets are all clean. You know, they're not running with rats like they are now.
Yeah. Just like China is the same.
Yeah, they cleaned that up. Got rid of all the pedophilia as well, didn't they? Lots of people were paying for that.
Freemasons, yeah. Exactly.
Getting back to this booklet. The sin of bourgeois patriotism was to confound a certain economic form with the national. It connected the two things that are entirely different. Forms of the economy, however firm they may seem, are changeable. The national is eternal. If I mix the eternal and the eternal will necessarily collapse when the temporal collapses. This was the real cause for the collapse of liberal society. It was rooted not in the eternal, but in the temporal. And when the temporal declined, it took the eternal down with it. Today, it is only an excuse for a system that brings growing economic misery. That is the only reason why international Jewry organises the battle of the proletarian forces against both powers, the economy and the nation, and defeats them. So I think what he's talking about there is this liberal monetary system that we have, and how that's tied in with the West, isn't it? The West and capitalism, and we must bring capitalism and democracy to countries like Syria and countries like North Korea, and this economic system that we have of capitalism, this is tied up with the European race, with the European people, unfortunately. And it's saying that, and when one collapses, the other collapses as well. Because the nation is eternal, but this banking system, that's just temporal. I mean, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson talks about this a lot, how liberalism is intimately connected with the banking system, and how it's
weird,
it's
isn't it? People can't get their head around that one.
Yeah, well, this is what Putin talks about as well. He says, you know, this is a total failure, this liberal system of liberal values, and the economy is collapsing because of it, and they're both tied in together. And he's got a national economy now, thanks to the sanctions. Russia is producing everything that they need for themselves, so they're self-sufficient. And because of that, they can, you know, they don't have to teach their children homosexuality. They don't have to promote miscegenation as part of being a part of the world system, because the world system now, the world banks and all the rest of it, that they will say to countries, you have to legalize homosexuality, you have to put in a Holocaust museum, You have to allow abortion, and then we'll lend you, and then we'll lend you this money, and then you can be part of our system, and you can trade with us, and it's all tied in together. But
Russia, you should say that, you know, because there was an instance of David Cameron at one point down in Africa, one of the nations down in Africa. They weren't particularly keen on homosexuals, and if you were known to be an homosexual, you know, you were facing prison at least, you know, if not more. And Cameron actually said at one point that he was going to stop the aid unless they changed their attitude, which was interesting.
That is what aid is for. You know, I don't, you know, this, you know, going after Donald Trump, well, we must impeach him because he said that Ukraine should investigate Joe Biden, or they won't get the aid. That isn't what he said, but that is what foreign aid is for. It's so that you can get an influence on the country that you give the foreign aid to. Nobody Correct. Just gives it out for free. It's all in exchange for something else. It's ridiculous, that yes. that impeachment.
We're quite blatant here. About it, though, with Cameron, when in this videotape that I watched, made it quite obvious.
Well, that's the way it works, isn't it? You know, you give a country aid, you expect something in return. Getting back to the booklet, from this understanding, the young nationalist draws its absolute demand. Oh, the young nationalism draws its absolute demand. The faith in the nation is a matter for everyone, never a group, a class, or an economic clique. The eternal must be distinguished from the temporal. Maintaining a rotten economic system has nothing to do with nationalism, which is an affirmation of the fatherland. I can love Germany and hate capitalism. Not only can I must. Only the annihilation of a system of exploitation carries with it the core of the rebirth of our people. So again, it's saying that nationalism is for everyone, not just for a group, a class, or an economic clique. Everybody's got to have a stake in the nation, whether they're working class or whether they are upper class, and it shouldn't matter what economic system. Economic systems come and go. It's the people that are more important. So what he's saying is the economy should be serving the people and not the people serving the economy.
Yeah, which is, it's always felt like that over here, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, this was the revolutionary idea that they had, was, you know, making it all work for them instead of them working for the machine. Get the machine working for us, the other way around.
And didn't it work?
Oh, yes. He says, we are nationalists because as Germans, we love Germany. Because we love Germany, we want to preserve it and fight against those who would destroy it. If a communist shouts, down with nationalism, he means the hypocritical bourgeois patriotism that sees the economy only as a system of slavery. If we make it clear to the man of the left that nationalism and capitalism, that is, the affirmation of the fatherland and the misuse of its resources, have nothing to do with each other, indeed, that they go together like fire and water, then even as a socialist, he will come to affirm the nation, which he will want to conquer. So interesting there. I'm not so sure if that would be so true now that everything's become so mixed up with the races. If you were to point out that nationalism actually has nothing to do with capitalism and we're against this usury slavery, that's not everything that the left is about now. It's so much more about race mixing as well. Because you could explain it, couldn't you? You know, the only way that socialism is going to work is if it's limited to within one nation. You can't allow everybody else to just come into that nation and take, like with the National Health Service and things like that.
To be honest, I often wonder what would have happened in Germany if by chance 1,400 German girls in Cologne had been raped back then by a group of foreigners. I really do believe it wouldn't have gone on as long as it did, and it would have been sorted never to happen again. Because that was really that was no different than the Bolsheviks raping in Germany at the time of World War. You know, you had 1,400 girls in Rotherham being raped by a foreign entity.
Well, they did have similar in the Rhineland, didn't they? They had the Rhineland bastards.
They did. that's when the race mixing started, straight after the Versailles Treaty.
And that was when they were a conquered people. They were a conquered people,
right.
and the French were in the Rhineland, and the French brought in all these Congolese soldiers.
40,000.
And they did attack the Germans, but the Germans, as I say, they were a conquered people, and they're not supposed to be a conquered people now. So how, you know, that couldn't happen, but it did happen. So it shows that Germany is still a conquered people, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and it shows that we are as well.
Yeah, but the insidiousness about it is that people don't see the chains. They don't realise that they.
No, that is the amazing feat they can pull off.
Yeah, and do that by controlling all the means of information. The newspapers, yeah, well, they're books, the education.
That, yeah, because you've got the press. How important it is that to get hold of the press, they know what that means. They can let people know what they want and what they don't want them to know, and that's worked throughout the ages for them.
That's why it's vital that we challenge it with our own sources of information.
Well, the internet's been a blessing for that, although they're tightening up as they can now, but for a long time, the internet was that freedom.
I think what you can say is every time they have, you know, tried to do something with the internet, we've always managed to find a way around it. And, you know,
yeah, well,
you've got to
be adaptable.
Yeah, but life is a struggle.
Yeah,
you gotta
work off your feet.
That's the thing, isn't it? You know, you struggle against these things, yeah. and you end up improving and you become better. And that's what it's all about. You know, they provide in this force that we sharpen ourselves against and sharpen our sword against them. And it would be blunt if it wasn't for that.
Yeah.
You know, when I think about it, I mean, just looking back at our content at Radio Aryan, I mean, it's massively improved since it first started 5 years ago. Just, you know, the quality of the audio and just everything to do with it. You become better at what you are, at what you're doing, basically.
They've tried to shut it down, though.
Oh, yeah, they tried to shut it down a few times.
They've demanded in Parliament.
Oh, they didn't demand it in Parliament, I don't think. They got an MP to comment on it for a BBC documentary. But that was quite generalised, I think. But we're not
ratings anyway, didn't it?
Well, I don't think we put the ratings up, but I don't think we fall foul of the law, because we don't blame Jews for everything, we don't blame blacks for everything, we don't incite racial hatred. You know, we might point out crimes that are occurring against our race, but it doesn't matter who is carrying out those crimes. And when it comes to who do you blame for this, well, you have to look at yourself. You have to look at ourselves. Because if you're going to say, well, look at the problems feminism has caused, women are the weaker sex. If you're going to say, look at the problems Jews have caused, Jews are only 2% of the population. You're going to say, look at the problem Negroes have caused. Well, they've got an average IQ of 75. So if you're going to say that all these other peoples are the cause of our problems, what you're saying is that the white man is so weak and pathetic, he can be overcome by 2% of the population, he can be overcome by women, he can be overcome by Negroes. And that just isn't true. The fact of the matter is, all of these things have happened because we let them happen. And, you know, it was our people in power that let them happen. But who are the people in power? They're made up of people exactly the same as us, with the exception of the Jews that are there. They're people just the same as us that have fallen to temptation. So what is it you're going to do about it? Well, you have to look at yourself and make sure that you don't fall to temptation. That's all you can do about it. If you look at them and worry about them all the time that are in power, you've got no influence on them whatsoever. I mean, you can vote, but it's a waste of time. Getting all angry and how are we going to get them to change their ways? You can't get them to change their ways, but you can change your own ways, and you can make sure that the way that you live your life is in tune with how a nationalist should live his life, and that you aren't going to fall to that temptation. And you never know, in 20 years' time, you might be in a position with influence, and all that training that you've had up till then will finally have a use. Yeah, when you get that temptation and you're able to resist it.
Well, I think ignorance plays a big part as well, because people are kept in the dark. I remember a comment on YouTube from somebody who was having to go to Germany saying, you know, allowing all these people, you know, mixing your race up, you're just pussies. But the guy didn't realise himself that we were run by the same Jews, whether they come from America or whether they come from Britain, I don't know. But we're under the Jews. And a lot of people don't know and don't realise.
You know, they fulfil a role. They tempt us. They tempt us and try and get us to do, you know, to go against what comes naturally to us. And they're very successful at that. But, you know, what does that do? Well, it provides us with a chance to prove our virtue. I mean, the Bible tells us that they're devils. And what is it that devils do? Well, devils tempt you. Why do we have devils? So that we can prove our virtue in resisting them. And, you know, you can either look at it supernaturally, or you can just look at it as that's just the way that it is. That's their group evolutionary strategy. They seek to corrupt and subvert the people that they live among, because it is a successful strategy that they've developed over the years, because it enables them to rise to the top of society and make lots and lots of material money. So that's just the way that they are. And we just have to accept that and resist it. But I think the best thing to do is make that info available. Sorry, go on, Dennis.
I think it's the nail on the head. They have done a number on their, certainly on the British people. There's not that many now today say that they believe in God or admit to being Christians. I don't believe. I think, you know, they've done a pretty good number on them.
Well, that's central as well, is having faith. You know, that is really central. And one way that you know, that appears to me as being central is when you look at people that are atheists or that don't have a belief in God. Something will happen, something bad will happen, and they won't know how to deal with it. It will be like the end of the world to them, and they'll want to run away, or they'll lose heart, or they'll try to give up, or it just becomes too much for them. Whereas if you've got faith, you can see the bigger scheme of things, and you understand that, you know, bad things happen and then good things come out of them. And, you know, you're taught that. Well, you're taught that by the Bible. If you look at Joseph, and he gets sold by his brothers to the slavers, and he ends up in Egypt, but he ends up saving the Egyptian empire from famine, and he ends up saving his brothers from famine. And, you know, you can look at more recent times. You look at Bill Fink. He was charged with manslaughter, and he got, what, 10 years in prison? But what did he spend that 10 years doing? He spent it translating the original Greek text into English, and now he's got his Christogenia ministry, which has reached, you know, hundreds of thousands of people and woken them up to the truth. Look at E. Michael Jones. He ends up losing his position at Notre Dame College, and what does he do? He builds builds up a publishing, his own publishing company, starts writing his own books, and does it all for himself. And that's all because people have faith that when these dreadful things happen to them, they have faith that there's a pattern to it. So what they do, they look for the path that providence is telling them they should take. And they look for that path, and they take that path. And then in a few years' time, they can see the reason why this bad thing happened. If you don't have faith, you know, people will go out and kill themselves when something bad happens. You know, I've known that happen.
It's strange, yeah. Yeah, it's strange, because that the Frankfurt School, who were notorious for all this kind of Marxist, atheist, etc., they actually come to the conclusion the problem with the European people was they thought they had a soul. So if they could get the people to think they haven't got a soul, that was the way in, and that's what they played on.
So that's cutting – again, that's what Goebbels is talking about here, isn't he, about the eternal and the temporal.
Mm-hmm.
When he's talking about the eternal, he's talking about the racial soul, the national soul that we are all a part of, that they try to cut us off from today and say that, it doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a nation. You don't have anything in common with these people that you share kinship ties with, that you're actually related to through a mother from 100 generations back or whatever. You know, if you're white, we're all related. It's like we're all part of the same tree. You could say, you know, you could look at it religiously. You could say, well Adam is the seed, and out of that seed came every other person descended from Adam, and it's a tree. And those branches, if that part of the family is interbred with somebody non-white, that branch is just dead from then on. It's no longer a part of the living tree. And I think if you were if you were to take time out of it, you know, time just keeps advancing. If you were to take time out of it and look at the white race, that's what you would see. It would look like a tree. That's why you get this, the family tree. And you get all these allegories in the Old Testament talking about various different types of trees, the cedar trees or the cedar trees, which is Lebanon, and the olive tree, which is Israel. And it uses trees as allegories for race, because that's what the race is. It's a tree. All these different ways of looking at things that come from being a nationalist. You start to see things that as they should be eternally rather than temporally, and the things that are
as
important.
A family, yeah.
Yeah. And all is an extension of the family. It says, that is our real task. As National Socialists, we were the first to recognize the connections and the first to begin the struggle. And they were, you know, to actually formulate all of this and how the nation should be run. He says, because we are socialists, we have felt the deepest blessings of the nation. And because we are nationalists, we want to promote socialist justice in a new Germany. A young fatherland will rise when the socialist front is firm. Socialism will become reality when the fatherland is free. So what did he mean by that? So socialist justice, social justice to them meant employment for everyone. The ability for everybody who is a part of the nation to work hard and earn good wages for doing it, and then raise up their standard of living through themselves, through their own hard work, rather than saying to people, look at those rich guys over there, we want to tax them as much as we can, and we want to take some of their wealth so that we can have it, because it's not fair that they've got all that wealth and you haven't. That's what the left will tell people today. That's how they'll try to inspire people today. So where you have these big movements saying, well, let's tax the rich and let's tax the corporations and let's give out free welfare. And that's not the way to do things. The way to do things is to give people the resources that they need in order for themselves to be self-sufficient. And that's why it worked so well in Germany. Because once they set up these big building projects, these big infrastructure projects, they had work for everybody. And at the same time, the wealth of the nation was increased because you had new roads, new communication systems, new railways, what have you. Because all these people were in work, they had more money, they had more disposable income, and they wanted consumable items, which they hadn't had before because they'd been poor. So there was a need then to create new consumer items. So another load of jobs was created, making all these new consumer items, and you had like a positive feedback loop. So the more things that were being created, the more money people earned, more they wanted things to be created, and the more they could afford them.
Yeah, it's a shame that the Americans, again, with the propaganda, they looked at it as, you know, socialists, as Marxists. They didn't see any socialism at all as good. And I remember Bill Cooper going to town about socialism, and the Nazis were socialists and the Marxists were socialists. They're all the same, but it wasn't. It was different. Well, but it fooled a lot of people.
It's a totally different way of achieving the goal that's there with socialism. Socialism wants to raise the living standards of its people, but left-wing socialism says, well, we'll raise the standards of the poor by taking from the rich. National socialism says we will raise the standards of everyone by giving everyone the resources to raise their living standards themselves. And then you've got, you know, the sense of satisfaction. Go on.
just talk about the how powerful the propaganda was over in America. It hit me the other day, actually. A prime example, is that when Max Baer, the German boxer, who was white, obviously, came over to America to fight Joe Louis, who was black, all America went for the black man. Because of the racial problem they have over in America, the propaganda was so bad about Nazism that they would have preferred a black man to beat a white European.
Because of the propaganda so much against the Europeans, saying that they were Nazis?
Against the Nazis, yeah. That's how powerful incredible the propaganda was.
Yeah, that's quite incredible. Well, we're going to have to leave that here, Dennis. And we're going to get into socialism next week. So thank you for coming on today. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
To Radio Aryan.